So the subject today, it was one in a series in this book that I'm going through, and I actually had went looked at it and made notes on it twice, and almost decided not to do it in the series, and I changed my mind because I think it's worth talking about. And the reason I want to bring it up today is for us, you know, to understand that depression is an illness. And I'm not a doctor, I'm not a psychologist, and I just want to talk about today about depression and look at it the way that from a biblical sense, and some things that hopefully we can do, and I say we, myself included, can do to make sure and help us not to fall into that, I'm gonna call it a rut, or you can call it whatever you want to call it, and depression, because it if you think that you're above and beyond depression, you're badly fooled. I you know, that's a fact. And I know that personally as a fact. And it's an amen, right? And you know, if you look at it the way I used to look at it, you're badly fooled also. Because in my younger years, I thought, how in the world could you do that? How could you get depressed? How could you do that? And once you live that, you have a totally different view of it. And I want to talk today. We're going to talk about it from a real life standpoint today, and some of the things that I want to bring up biblically about it. And I think hopefully we'll get a better understanding. But I want to preface this is, if yourself or anyone you know is in a state of depression, get help. Some way, somewhere, get help. The Sunday school lesson is not an answer for it, but it's just something, you know, I just feel like we need to talk about it. I think it's something that needs to be talked about. So just a few interesting facts, well, not interesting, but just a few facts right here that's about this. In the U.S. today, it's estimated 121 million people suffer from extreme depression. 17% of people will suffer major depression in their life. That's a lot of people. 17 million adults and 2 million teens report depression every single year. New look. Depression is the leading causes of disability in the U.S. It's estimated that it cost approximately $55 billion in lowered productivity in the workplace and absenteeism each year. Antidepressants have soared 400% since 1988. So, World Health Organization, in conjunction with the Harvard Medical School, says that they found 9.6% of Americans experience bipolar disorder, major depressive disorder, chronic minor depression over the course of 1 year, the highest among 14 major nations polled. We're over just multitudes above countries like Lebanon, Mexico, and Nigeria, who you would think would be greatly. He said, one guy wrote, he says, if the numbers are to be believed, and I think they are, we all know someone struggling with depression, or we may have struggled with it ourselves at some point in our life. We must realize that depression is the spiritual equal to cancer or any other terrible illness, because it is an illness, right? And that's one of the reasons why we're going to talk about it today. So, and I think one of the, if you look at depression as an enemy, and I think it is, because it's an enemy not only to your own self, but to the relationships, whether it be your spouses or your children or your friends or whatever it is. And the effects of it is tremendous. And I've seen it, I've watched it, I've experienced it, and it's just far reaching. To depress means something, really means to make it lower than it normally is. Depression, you think about a depression in the ground, right? Everybody's experienced, like I said, this form of depression at some point in their life. thinking and functioning at a level below what is normal for them. In fact, depression, feeling low, has been called the common cold of the soul because people sooner or later will catch it. Depression's a human thing. It's not a non-Christian thing, as some people think. There's nothing in the Bible that says if you're a Christian, you won't go through that. And we're going to look at some examples of that. The Bible testifies the fact with many case studies. Let's look at a couple of them. Moses, right? Moses was, of course, was leading the whining Israelites on this aimless journey, right? You know, and he cries out to God. He says, I am not able to bear all these people alone because the burden is too heavy for me. If you treat me like this, talking to God, please kill me here and now. I have found favor in your sight. Do not let me see my wretchedness. Another one. Elijah, when the prophet was hounding pursued by Queen Jezebel, he said, enough is enough. Now, Lord, take my life, for I am no better than my father's. And here's an interesting one. All right. The two people mentioned just then, they're the two people that appeared on the Mount of Transfiguration with Jesus. Think about that just a minute. You know, the two people, all right? Depressions, there's no mountaintops. Transfiguration seems unimaginable. David wrote about it multiple times. Psalm 42 says, my tears have been my food day and night while they continually say to me, where is your God? Psalms 32, when I keep silent, my bones grow old through my groaning all day long, for day and night your hand was heavy upon me. My vitality was turned into the drought of summer. So a few people in the Bible. Now, and it's interesting. Let's look at a few well-known ministers that's recorded. C.H. Spurgeon. He was getting ready to preach on Isaiah 41, and he walks up in London to the church. And I think this was the year, it's 1866, right? So he says this to it. He says, I have to speak today to myself. Whilst I shall be endeavoring to encourage those who are distressed and downhearted, I shall be preaching, I trust, to myself, for I need something for which shall cheer my heart. Why, I cannot tell. Wherefore, I do not know, but I have a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan to buffet me. My soul is cast down within me. I feel as I had rather die than live. And that all God hath done by me seems to have been forgotten. And my spirit flags, my courage breaks down. I need your prayers. Martin Luther. Martin Luther, you know, considered to be the father of the Protestant Reformation. He had such battles with depression, he would hide himself in his room for days. And the family would notice him getting bad, and they would go in and take everything sharp out of the house, including ink pens, the quills, take everything out because he so much. Scottish reformer John Knox prayed, Lord Jesus, receive my spirit and put an end to this miserable life. So looking through the Bible, it's recorded in the Bible. There's no bones about it. It's recorded among modern day ministers that have gone down in history to be some of the greatest ministers there is. So is it real? Yeah, depression is extremely real. Does it happen to the best in the theological field? Absolutely. Does it happen to the stalwarts of the Bible? Absolutely. Does it happen to you and I? Absolutely. So today, as we go through this, I want to talk about some of the things that we can use for ourselves, our friends, our family, to note this, and some things that we can do to avoid this. And I want to talk about some of the triggers, and I think it'll make a whole lot more sense as we go on through this. There are many expressions of depression in the church and the Bible, and none is more open than Job. Now, we all know the story of Job, and we all know what Job went through. And through this, you know, through the story of Job, you know, Job wasn't aware. He didn't have the Cliff Notes known as the Bible that we have. So he didn't have the understanding that this was a test. And Job was depressed, and he records it very much throughout the book of Job. And actually in the latter part of the book of Job, I think it's chapter 29, he actually compares his life before this happened to his life after this happened. And he talks about the kids spitting in his face and the people that used to come to him for advice now make fun of him and mock him. So he really does a big comparison later on. And as we all know, what happened to Job is he went through this and trying to understand. And you remember what his wife encouraged him to do? Curse God, in other words, commit suicide. That was a spouse helping him out. So be careful if you talk to your spouse. I'm just a little anyway. As we go through this and look at it, you know, Job was in God's favor, so to speak. And of course, throughout the works portion, you know, of the Old Testament, Job, you know, he couldn't understand why he was being done this way, quote, by God, or these things were happening to him because he was in God's favor. And it's like, you know, he's trying to figure out what has he done. And so I'm going to say this. This is from me. I am not a person to believe that God brings something like that upon you for something you've done. I don't go to that. You know, I just don't. That's just me. That's my personal thing. Does God put trials in your life? Yes, I think he does. And, you know, does these trials make you come out sharper than you were before?
But at the same time, that's where our God would come from.
We do. And, right. And I want to, you know, that's just
hard me. Lessons, hard lessons.
It is a hard lesson. So let's look at Job. And so Job has three laments that he goes through, and he asks these questions, and we're going to look at these questions, and then we're going to go back and biblically look at some of the things that goes on with us each day. So three things that Job talked about or laments as he goes through. The first one is, really, he's asking, why did I arrive, or why was I born? Job 3, 1 through 10, he said, may the day perish on which I was born, and the night in which it was said, a male child has been conceived. May the day be darkened, may God above not seek it, nor the light shine upon it. Obviously, word for man, it didn't see any future. You know, Job later admits, and his words have been rash. He talks about it in Job 6, that it's pretty rash of what he said. Now, the second thing he did, why did I survive? If he says, if Job regrets his very birth, he must also question the life made possible by his birth. Why did I not die at birth, he talks about. Why did I not perish when I came from the womb? You know, one guy wrote this. He said, when life is good, we think, this is what it's all about. Talking about work, health, family, and enjoyment of things that goes on. This is living, in other words. But what happens to that definition when the joys are systematically stripped away, like Job went through? Job wonders why God would let such a heartbreaking life continue. Another figure, by the way, Abraham Lincoln once said, I am now the most miserable man living. If what I feel were equally distributed to the whole human family, there would not be one cheerful face on earth. Whether I shall ever be better, I cannot tell. I awfully forebode I shall not. To remain as I am is impossible. I must die to be better, it appears to me. Abraham Lincoln. So the third thing that Job talked about, so he asked, why am I still alive? And this, you know, that's a very common thing about this. It said, since I had to be born, I didn't die at childbirth. Why can't I just die now? Job 3, 20 through 6, it says, why is light given to him who is in misery? A life to be bitter of soul, who long for death, but it does not come, and search for it more than hidden treasures, who rejoicingly exceedingly are glad that they can find the grave. So, you know,
I'm already depressed.
Yeah.
Listening to all that.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, my point to bring this up is, you know, we've talked about all these figures in biblical times and the church era and the world today. And it's just, I mean, most people may have not have known these people went through these areas of depression, but it's there. It's true. It's very, very true. William Barclay writes that in Job's greatness, he said, the very greatness of Job lies in the fact, in spite of everything which tore his heart, he never lost the grip on faith and his grip on God. But I'm here to tell you, from a personal feeling, it's easy to stand there and try to figure out, God, where are you at? You know, where are you? You know, I've asked these, prayers. And you and we're going to talk about it in a minute about why, and the question of why is a very huge question when dealing with something like this. Why did this have to happen? Why did this happen? Why, you know, why? We'll get into that just in a few minutes. All right. So one of the guys wrote on one of the commentaries. He says if you try to look for a book in the Bible that would help you through a bad situation in your life, he said, Job is it. Because if you want to follow somebody through a tough time in their life, says Job's there. So God does that for us. So why is it that we get depressed? And again, I'm not a clinical psychologist. This is just from the outside. And knowing what I personally can attest to and some of the things that goes on and documented. Sometimes depression is situational causes. A divorce, a loss of the job, something major going on in your life with you, yourself, your family members. Something that comes about. Job's depression was based on a situation. In our own lives, there's links between what happens to us and how we feel. The circumstances of life are a good place to start in searching the cause of depression, what's been going on that might be, all right? One guy wrote, he said, sometimes there's systemic causes. And he said, I don't know who deserves the credit for the observation, but I believe it's true. And he says, our souls and our bodies live so close together, they catch each other's diseases. Did you get that one? That's interesting. Let me read that one again, because listen real close to this. Our souls and our bodies live so close together, they catch each other's diseases. So it's hard to feel good spiritually if you don't feel good physically or mentally. And that's the truth. That's just the truth. It's hard to be there, right? Things going badly can cause depression. Sometimes there's satanic issues. We've had a lot of discussions in here about the powers that Satan has on us. And I think Job is a great example in the Bible on the powers that Satan has limited to do stuff directly to us, our bodies. Like I don't believe Satan can say, oh, there goes, you know, a child of God down the road. You know, make this tree fall on. I don't think Satan can do that. And I think Job proves that because he had to ask permission to make it happen. But one of the things that Satan does is if something happens in your life, that's an end for him. And it's the end to say, you see, I told you God didn't care about you. Or see, you know, your prayers don't work. See, you know, you ever thought your prayers didn't work? Easy done, isn't it? Easy to think that. Easy to go there. Spiritual causes. An old preacher says one time, God puts his children to bed in the dark sometimes. That's probably a good truth, right? Said, although Satan does not hesitate to destroy property or wealth, through different ways, the tax only steps his ultimate target, and that's our faith in God. That's what his target is. If he can cause us to question God's love and fidelity and purposes, then his destruction is complete. The most dangerous time for a Christian is not the moment a disaster or disruptive event occurs. It's the hours and days after that event. Satan attacked Jesus in the wilderness. You remember So if you remember reading in the Bible, what's the verses right before Satan takes Jesus away to the wilderness to tempt him? What's the story right before that? Anybody remember?
Spirit coming down.
Exactly. So God speaks from heaven, and this is my son, and I am proud of him, right? So, and the next thing you know, the next verse, you know, he's off to the wilderness, all right? And one of the guys in the commentary has talked about that, and he says, you know, one of the things that we need to watch out for in our lives is that depression can come in two different avenues. One, depression can come right before a big peak. So you may be at the bottom here, right before something great happens in your life, or more likely, it happens after you've reached the peak. And you're so high up, and then the next thing is it bottoms out, and the bottom may, you know, seems lower. What's the thing that they talk about the waves? The height of the wave is directly proportional to the valley beneath the wave or after the wave. So it all comes together, right?
It's almost like a double whammy. I'm sure all of y'all, we've all went through difficult times. Then you reach out to somebody you think is your friend, and then they ignore you or whatever. They don't have that same compassion for you that you thought they would have.
Yeah.
That makes you even more depressed. You know, that, you know, people you thought were your friends when you went through tough times. You know.
Look at Job's three friends. Yeah. It's a great example, right? Right. Sometimes there's spiritual causes, as we mentioned. It's one of the greatest lessons from the life of Job. We cannot view God as a cosmic machine in which we insert a coin of good works or sacrifice to receive a prize. We're not works-based, are we? So just because you go do good things, you know? I know a guy one time it said something. He says, unfortunately in life, sometimes no good deed goes unpunished. And there's a lot of truth of that sometimes. You know it? You go and try to do something really good, and then you get slapped in the face or your feet stepped on or something. You know, no good deed goes unpunished sometimes. Job thought he was managing his system by giving conscious life towards God. You know, his kids. You remember he gave sacrifices to help try to keep his kids in the favor of God. He kept trying to do all these things to run around. So now then let's look at I want to look at the expectations of depression. Someone describes spiritual depression to prove the point, says Elijah's dramatic confrontation from the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel. So God worked a mighty miracle in response to Elijah's prayer. Pagan prophets were routed, you know, you wouldn't kill on how many of them. Yet within hours of his victory, he was running from his life, Queen Jezebel. So when he could run no more, he collapsed under a broom tree and he wanted to die. On the mountain, Elijah stood strong. After the victory, he fled in fear and wished for his death. Now, I'm gonna bring another one to you. You know, I know we've talked about prayer as we pray, and sometimes it feels like, you know, we just, you know, you pray to your heart's just is wrecked and you don't hear an answer. And you know, that's just the way God works, right? But this is interesting. This commentary brought up. He says, Jesus experienced the high point in his beginning of his miracle. That's talking about his baptism, all right? And he says, over the years, I've expected a spiritual challenge after a special joy of celebration. Charles Haddon Spurgeon discovered depression often came before an outpouring of God's blessings in his life, all right? When times of darkness come, we can find great comfort in the understanding of King David and Charles Spurgeon learned. We may now be in a valley, but the valley wouldn't be valleys without the surrounding mountains around it. So if you can't, it's hard to describe a valley unless you describe the high peaks that go along with it. It's just sometimes it's hard to be. Elimination of depression. Again, I can't stress enough. You know, we're just talking biblically and some things that we can do in our walk with God to help ward off depression coming over us. But if you know of somebody or yourself, don't hesitate to get help. Don't hesitate that. Reveal your depression. Number one, first be honest when you're facing depression. Job is a superb model. He talks about it in Job 7:11. He said, I will not restrain my mouth. I will speak in the anguish of my spirit. I will complain in the bitterness of my soul. Find somebody to talk to. My greatest error in the face of depression is to privatize it. When we make our despair known to those who care for us, we join the company of saints who have found deliverance in part through their authenticity. And talk. Resist your depression. Easier said than done, but listen to this. Says Jesus asked the man who was lame by the pool in Bethsaida, says, do you want to be made well? And that wasn't really a rhetorical question. It was, what's in your heart? What do you want? What is it that you want in there? He goes, none of us want to be depressed, but we need to consider how intent we are to be healed. I find this out as I get older. And one of the guys put on Facebook the other day, and he says, don't you hate it when you see a really old person and realize you graduated high school with them? A lot of truth in that, right? But you know, if you ever met somebody, then you go up, you go, how you doing? And then you get a dissertation of every organ in their body, and they like it. They like telling you about that. You know, my liver does this, my heart does this. And
they can't shut up.
That's true. I couldn't say that better myself, right, Marty? Research your depression. Check out your body. You know, a lot of people have, you know, a lot of things that can be physically wrong that can cause depression. You know, do your own research. You know, don't give up on it, right? Other valuable kinds of research include counseling, medical checkups, evaluation of your circumstances. Research your Christian life. If you see you have slowly stopped doing the things that healthy Christians do, fix it. Replace your depression. And this is one thing that really, I know, played a big role in my life. And I mentioned earlier, as I was younger, I thought, how in the world can you be depressed? Well, just go on. Just stop. You know, if you're depressed, then stop being depressed. Well, it don't work that way. I did. I absolutely did.
I did
too. And I did. And you know, and I think sometimes this is one of the things I'm going to talk about this today. I didn't see the signs of it coming on to me. I didn't see that. All right. And for the people that's known me for a long, long time, I'm probably one of the happiest joking people that you know of. And then when you go back and you see that time in your life, you thought, wow, I got pretty low there for a while, you know, and I don't remember seeing it coming.
Perfect example is Robin Williams.
Yes, absolutely. Most definitely. Yes. You know, you just, how would you ever think of him, you know, being depressed? But so replace your depression. And I think this really comes. Is if you find yourself lonely and you find yourself defeated, and I had thought at one time, well, I can't do anything right. Everything I've touched has just like fell apart, you know. And you get to the point where you don't want to touch anything anymore, literally. And you know, so one guy wrote, and he says, when your emotions are low or muted, his important question is not what have I done wrong, but whom should I turn to? Some turn inward, others turn to friends. The wisest is turning to God. This is Jeremiah wrote this. He says, it's been my experience that when we tell God what we want, he gives us what we need. We frequently don't know what to pray for, but he's gracious and kind and holding higher standards for us than we have for ourselves. Job wanted answers. Paul wanted relief, but God had the grace to give them what they truly needed, more of himself. Humility says, God owes me nothing. He is not my servant. I am his. God is God, and I'm only me. The wisest thing I can do is to place my trust in him. His humble understanding is the gift God gave Job at the end of his spiritual issues. Right? All right, so moving on. So the effects of depression. Job saw that, you know, even before it was over. In Job 23, he says, he's talking to God, he says, he knows the way I take. In other words, he knows the path that I go. When he has tested me, I shall come forth as gold. So after his suffering was over, Job realized that his quest had been for the wrong thing. He didn't need to know why, he needed to know whom. Edward Welch is a writer, said, points out the ending makes the story. He said, Romeo and Juliet is a lovely romance until it all comes to a tragic conclusion. Some stories are almost painful until everything comes together in a happy ending. When I was reading some of this, I was looking up stuff. So if a movie or a play is described as two different things, as a comedy or a tragedy. I didn't know that. It's just the two different ways. You know the difference between a comedy and a tragedy? One's a happy ending and one's a tragedy. And you know, the one thing that we can put our faith in is the Bible has that happy ending, right? I mean, even though we go through this, the Bible, the ending is happy ending. We know that. We know that going forward. He said, we stay on the edge of our seats in the movie because of uncertain will happen again. Hopeful conclusion delights us. But what if we go back and see the film again, he says. Now we know the plot, the complications, the misunderstanding, and the entanglement doesn't fool us anymore. We know where it's all headed. It looks gloomy right now, but just wait. And the faces in the seats around us are filled with worry, but we know what's going on because we know what the ending is. Life is like that when those who know God, we read the book, we know the ending. Although the plot and entanglements are complicated, though we have our laughs and we shed genuine tears, we know how it's all going to work out in the end. We can't lose. God's love has the victory. Those who trust him live happily ever after and find the story. And, you know, I mentioned earlier the why, and I think for me, that was the biggest hurdle that I had is I wasn't close enough to God to understand the question why. And as I was researching this, and I was reading a couple of things, one guy really brought out the questions on why. He says, if you look at David, or you look at Elijah, and you look at Moses, at some point they all ask why. And in almost no situations did God answer the why. And you know what the biggest why question in the Bible is? Come from Jesus on the cross. Remember what he asked God? Did God answer him? No, he didn't. Son of God asked a question on the cross and God didn't answer. So we always don't get the answer to the why questions, do we? But we know the ending and we know where it's going. And, you know, again, I hesitated on doing this. And after I read through it about the fourth time and I knew what the rest of the chapter was going to be about, I felt that it's something that need to be brought up and need to be discussed with today. And again, if you've ever dealt with it, you know exactly what I'm talking about. If you hadn't, it's hard to understand till you do. And again, I highly encourage if you or any of your loved ones or friends are going through it, please help them. Reach out to them. That's all I have today, guys. Any comments, thoughts?
Is depression a disease?